We will get started with Steve Steinberg presenting on Jack Quinn.
All right. I'm going to jump right into this. We're waiting for the screen to get shifted here to my slides. And here we go. So Jack Quinn was a ball player for many years in the both a major and the minor leagues, and he became a centerpiece of a very controversial case in 1918. But to understand the case, we really have to understand what was going on during World War I. So I'm actually going to take about half of the presentation talking about some crucial dates during the Great War. And this is a quote from Eugene Murdoch about what kind of an impact that the Quinn case had. And the key players here, here's a picture of Jack Quinn from 1920. Charles Comiskey, one of the founding owners of the American League. And the other key players were two of the members of baseball's three-man national commission, Van Johnson, the president of the American League, and Gary Herman. So what happened here is we entered the war, the United States, in April of 1917. The war had already been going on for 3 years. It had a real impact in some minor league cities because Canada, let's not forget, they were a member of the British Commonwealth. As soon as Britain declared war on the Axis, Canada went to war. So towns like Toronto, Montreal, you know, could have had impact, no question about it. But in 1917, even though we had entered the war, baseball and a lot of American society did not really get impacted that much because we were gearing up very slowly. We didn't have much of a standing army. We didn't have much of equipment. And in 1917, really, there was not much of an impact on the game at all. I'll touch upon one thing. And Major League Baseball and Ben Johnson, the president of the American League, was pretty much the front man of it, sort of lurched back and forth. On the one hand, they wanted to protect their interests and say, we got to continue for the morale of the country. We got to play baseball. Players should continue. And they argued that the entertainment tax of 10% that was added throughout society was bringing money to the war effort. But on the other hand, they wanted to support the manpower needs of the war. So they were back and forth, and Ben Johnson was inconsistent also. By 1918, it was very clear that the United States manpower was going to be the deciding factor in the war. Millions of people had been killed, Russian, German, French, English, and other countries, and they were literally bled to death. And the American war effort was gearing up now, and I think by the summer of 1918, 10,000 American men were disembarking every day in ports in France. And so the first key thing that I want to talk about, in 1918, we had a draft starting in 1917 of all the men that were between ages 21 and 30. The government, the provost marshal, the head of the United States Army, basically announced a work or fight order. And that very simply meant either you had to work, if you're one of these able-bodied men, in a key essential industry like shipbuilding or steel making, or you had to fight. And if you weren't going to enlist, we were going to draft you. There were exceptions, I think, if you supported a family and things like that. And basically, by July 1st, you had to get in an essential industry or you had to be subject to the draft. Now, were ball players going to be part of an essential industry? Well, you could argue it helps for the morale of the country, and I think Major League Baseball was maybe hoping that it would be. And the government had to decide, is baseball going to be considered an essential industry? If it's not, then ball players are going to have to leave their teams and enlist or go work for a shipbuilding team. And basically, Secretary of War Newton Baker, who, by the way, was a Quaker, a pacifist, he basically ruled on July the 20th that baseball is not essential. It's interesting. I believe the Broadway actors continued having Broadway shows during the war. And I believe part of the reason was there was an image maybe ballplayers were slackers. That was the word then. And also, if you went to a baseball game, it took you away from your job, most likely, because it was during the day. If you went to a Broadway show, it was at nighttime, so your productivity in society was not impacted as much. Now, the dates are going to be very important when we get into the Jack Quinn case. President Woodrow Wilson said he sees no reason, even though baseball is not an essential industry, to stop the game. And Franklin Roosevelt in World War II said the same thing. It may not be quite the same game with all the stars, but that's what he argued. And basically, Secretary Baker gave baseball until September 1, a little extra time, and the season was going to wind down, or those players had to get into either an industry or into the war effort. Now, could the game have been continued? We're going to look at that. Of course, it could have with older players, players that had different kinds of injuries. But it's clear that the president said, keep on playing ball. Now, at the same time, in the minor leagues in 1917, there were some low minors that could not survive, and they basically shut down before the end of the 1917 season. And baseball's governing body, the National Commission, which we're talking about, said, too bad, you minor leagues. Your players now are free agents, and we can grab them. We can take them. And by the way, this whole paper is really a window into the labor relations that were going on in baseball at the time. We're pretty one-sided, as I think we're going to see. And so basically, the National Commission said, these players are fair game to be grabbed with no compensation. The sporting news said that there were moral rights, that basically maybe they would compensate. It became not a real relevant point because most of the leagues that shut down in 1917 were very low minors. So I don't even know of a player that was grabbed myself from a low minor league team during this time. And basically now here we have this situation, and Major League Baseball is seeing attendance fall. How much did attendance fall? Well, you can see it here pretty dramatically. And in 1918, the season was shortened by about 9%, but still, it's precipitous. I haven't studied the World War II drop-off, which I think would be interesting, but the Major League Baseball owners said, hey, we've got an out here. We're going to say that because of the war, we have to stop. And the Seymours, in their history of baseball, basically said that MLB saved about $200,000, which is a lot of money in 1918 dollars. So what does Major League Baseball do? It gave all their players what's called a 10-day notice. The standard contract in baseball said that you could get a 10-day notice and you're gone. If you tore up your leg or your arm, you get a letter in the locker room after the game. We're sorry, you got injured. 10 days, we're no longer paying you. There was no corresponding right that a player, for whatever reason, could give the Major League Baseball a 10-day notice. So what did baseball do? Baseball decided that they were going to let these players become free agents, just like in the minor leagues. Now, why did they decide that? That seems pretty dramatic. Well, they were scared to death that if they just canceled the season and told the players they couldn't do anything, that the courts were going to throw the reserve clause out. It's very clear that there was concern about this. And the Federal League, which was an upstart league in 1914 and 1915, there were many court cases, and while they were muddled, there was no question there were a lot of judge rulings that really did not look very favorably on the reserve clause. So Major League Baseball wanted now to have it both ways. They wanted to save money because the season was just not drawing fans. And quite frankly, in all fairness to Major League Baseball, obviously the quality of baseball would have gone down. There's no question, just like during World War II it went down. But still, the president made it clear that they did not have to stop. And yet, on September 1st, they did stop. Now, Major League Baseball tried to have it both ways because they basically said, the players are free agents, but... And there's a word that I would probably throw out here, which is a word we hear nowadays some, and it's collusion. And basically, there was an understanding among the owners that the New York Yankees weren't going to sign Ty Cobb right away. And so they were trying to have it both ways. But basically, if you look at the back here to the dates, and we're going to get into the Quinn case, Major League Baseball tried to have it both ways. Now, in 1917, they said, hey, when a minor league made their players close the league, they're totally free agents. Major League Baseball must have been very awkward for them as they were trying to come up with a position. They took the position that they were wrong in 1917, that really the minor leagues should, even though they were free agents, that when the game starts again, that those players should belong to their old teams. Now, two players that I know of, Jake Daubert, the all-star first baseman for the Dodgers, the Robins, Bert Schotten, longtime later manager in baseball, they went to court and they sued and they said, hey, we signed a contract through the end of September, and they won their cases. However, their teams released them. And actually, Daubert did very well. He ended up on the Cincinnati Reds, so he got a World Series check the next year. And obviously, Bert Schotten was actually picked up by Branch Rickey, because Rickey knew him from the St. Louis Browns. Now, the Sporting News, which really reflected Major League Baseball, had this quote here. And what they're basically saying is, we're shutting down baseball because we were forced to shut it down. And that's the position that they're taking. Clearly, they didn't have to. They could have populated these teams. And so they're basically saying the government's worker fight order did that. And they said they really had to protect baseball. And this is in the 1919 Reach Guide, but it's really reflecting, which was the American League publication, but it was also a Spalding Guide. And you can see they're almost saying here, what we're doing is not legal. But what we're doing is we're going to keep the best interests of the club. So when the war ends, these players are going to go back to their clubs. And if you're a fan of the Detroit Tigers, you deserve to see Ty Cobb again play for the Tigers. They also said here it's helping the players. I'm not sure we would agree with that, because the players would have much preferred to be free agents. Now, let's take a look at this as we get into Jack Quinn. Jack Quinn was a star pitcher of the New York Americans. He won 18 games in 1910. His career tailed off, and he was in the Federal League and the minor leagues. He really wasn't wanted. He won 26 games in 1914 in the Federal League. And at the end of the Federal League, which didn't make it after 1915, nobody wanted him. And he came back and he joined Vernon, which was a small town south of L.A., in the Coast League. He became a star in the Coast League. And in 1917, he won 24 games. In 1918, the Pacific Coast League decided on July, we got the date here, 14, attendance is just falling. The other thing was that expenses were rising. The best example I can give is the Railroad Board, the National Railroad Board, raised the round trip ticket from LA to San Francisco from $21.50 to $45. Now you can imagine that at $19, $18 and multiply by the number of players. So they shut down as of the 14th. So they basically said, hey, the players are free agents. They can do what they, you know, they want. And Major League Baseball at this point hadn't done that ruling where they retroactively changed their mind. Remember, July 14th is 6 days before, looking at the chart, that baseball was ruled not essential. So for all we know, on July 14th, Major League Baseball might have gone on. So what happened to Jack Quinn? Well, Charles Comiskey knew that Quinn lived in Chicago. His wife's family was from there. And he contacted Gary Herman, the president of the National Commission. Gary, I'd like to get this guy Jack Quinn here. What do I do? How do I get him? So Gary Herman said, well, they're free agents. Why don't you work out a deal with Quinn? And you know what? If he sticks with you, maybe then you're going to give his club the draft price, give him a little money, but negotiate with Quinn because he's a free agent. Well, there was one problem, and already Charles Comiskey did not have the greatest relations with Ban Johnson. Now, assuming that Ban Johnson, the president of the American League, was not on vacation at the time, if I understand correctly, Comiskey and Ban Johnson were in the same city, right? They were both in Chicago. And yet, whether by telegram or by telephone, Comiskey calls Gary Herman. So he may have already had that strained relationship. But what happened? Well, at the same time, Miller Huggins decides to call Ban Johnson and says, I like this guy, Jack Quinn. He used to be a Yankee many years ago, a New York American. We want to sign him. So what does Gary Herman say? He says, go negotiate with the club and pay Vernon. And guess what? On July 18th, Jack Quinn signed a contract with the Chicago White Sox on the very day that the New York Yankees signed a contract with Vernon to acquire the rights to Jack Quinn. So we can see we already got a problem here. To make it even more complicated, on July 14th, the owners of the Vernon Club, which finished in first place, and the LA Angels that finished in second place, two games back, said, you know, let's make a little extra money. Let's have a championship post this shortened season series. And that series is going to start on July 17th. So now it gets even further muddled. The players were going to become free agents at the time that the league ended. When did the league end operations? Well, you can see the confusion that's mounting here. They're really an unfortunate situation. The Vernon team, Jack Quinn pitched twice in that series. He lost both games. He lost 3-1 to Doc Crandall, the former Giant star. And then he lost another game 4-3. But at that point, we can see what's going on here with the dates. And the series obviously went on. Jack Quinn reported to the Chicago White Sox, even though his manager, Vernon, said, you better get yourself to New York. And he played, and he went 5-1 in the month of August with a 2.29 ERA. He had a sensational time. Two of his five wins were against the Yankees. Once he pitched six innings of three-hit ball, the last six innings of a 15-inning game, and you can see that this guy had some talent. By the way, in 1918, in the shortened season, he had the lowest earned run average in the history of the Pacific Coast League, either 148 or 143. Carlos Bauer's done some correction there. And basically, what happened then? We have to remember, the National Commission did not rule until August 1st that these players, even though they were free agents, are going to revert to their clubs. So you look at these dates here, and you really have a muddled situation. So what happens? On August 24th, the National Commission gives Jack Quinn to the New York Yankees. And the quote of the commission is, this case is a rather peculiar one, and it certainly is. The controversy is rather unfortunate for several reasons. And I think if we look at these dates here, we can see why it is the case. You know, what happened when they were bought was before other things happened. And basically, Charles Comiskey was furious at this point, and it really broke the relationship between him and Ben Johnson. And in 1929, just as an aside, let's finish off. This is 1918, and Jack Quinn is a 35-year-old guy at the end of his career, near the end of his career. Some of you in the room may know that Jack Quinn pitched for 15 more years. Lyle Spatz are deep into a dual biography of Jack Quinn and Howard Emke, two pitchers that were told they were done or finished long before they were done. So basically, he went on. He starred with the Yankees. He won 18 games again 10 years after he'd won it in 1920. The Yankees did not hold on to it. But basically, the implications here would become pretty profound. And one of the quotes here, this was a quote that Ben Johnson gave near the end of his life. And I happen to think that he was correct. Major League Baseball, really, who had the power in this era? The teams, not the players. And so he's really saying here, the way to negotiate, if you have a conflict, and this is really an unfortunate situation, you got to go by the Yankees' claim because they paid the team and they didn't pay the player. And this is 1929. Ben Johnson, there was two serialized series of his life that were in newspapers across America, and that was one in one of them. And he basically said, after that, Comiskey never spoke to me, and the breach had never been patched up. Charles Comiskey actually wrote a letter to the Cleveland Plain Dealer after they had this series and said, hey, Ben Johnson was showing poor judgment. I was already, you know, it wasn't just this. He was already at the point of just really not running things very well. So as we look at the situation here, just in close, it was an unfortunate situation. Ben Johnson had obviously an enemy in Harry Frazee of the Boston Red Sox. Now he had a sworn enemy and a very powerful owner in Charles Comiskey. Less than a year later, he would rule against the Yankees or try to prevent Carl Mays from joining the Yankees. So now he had a third powerful team against him. And obviously with the Black Sox scandal and other things, he just did not have the power base that he had beforehand. And I think what I would close with here is just an intriguing situation. A little tidbit, Gene Carney, and who founded the Black Sox committee, who he in his book, Burying the Black Sox, wonders if the National Commission had given Jack Quinn to the Chicago White Sox, would the Black Sox scandal never have happened? Now, he's wondering about that. It makes an assumption that Quinn would not have gravitated to the Black Sox. Gene felt he wouldn't have. I feel even though we're writing about him, and we have to be careful not to be biased, I would say he wouldn't have also, and it would have given Kid Gleason and the White Sox another healthy arm, and possibly the Black Sox scandal might not have happened. So Jack Quinn became sort of a pawn in the middle of this case, and obviously Comiskey never forgave him. There were some tough rulings. I've gotten contradictory information as to whether this was a ruling just by the American League, because it was two American League teams and not the National Commission. And I found evidence both ways, and if you had to force me to pick, I would probably say Johnson made the decision, but he knew he'd catch hell from Comiskey, so he asked the National Commission to give him cover. and they made the ruling, and it was the case. So if anyone has any questions on this, I thank you for listening about the Jack Quinn case. Yes, Tom. Yeah, Gary Herman did not know. I think he did, and I think it was unanimous. And the third person, I think John Hadler, is not as powerful. Yeah, I mean, it was really, he was not talking to, Ben Johnson and Gary Herman were obviously not communicating together, and I think it was unanimous, but I almost think it might have just been an American League ruling, and then Ben Johnson wanted a little cover. Anyone else? Yeah, so basically, Vernon won the pennant by 2 years, but it's a trivia question. If someone had asked you, who was the team that, the best team in the PCL in 1918? Vernon beat, it wasn't Hollywood, it was the Los Angeles Angels. Vernon won the pennant by 2 games, but Los Angeles won the best of 7 series. Actually, it was 5-2, and Quinn lost 2 of them. So they were the champions, even though Vernon won the pennant. No, it's just that in 1919, Jack Quinn was no longer a member of the Chicago White Sox. Had he been a member and had he been honest, he would have given the White Sox another honest pitcher. That's what Gene Carney is just wondering about. And Quinn was on the Yankees at that point.
But there was no parent club to that team.
There was no what parent club? Yeah, no, they were actually, when the Yankees got Quinn, they sent 3 players to Vernon in compensation. None of the 3 ever returned to, they were all bit players in the major leagues, never returned to the major leagues. Anyone else? Yes. Well, we do, because Bill Essek, his manager, I think went on to be a Yankee scout, called him in and said, hey, get yourself to New York. And you're going to be in trouble if you don't get to New York. And Quinn's family lived in Chicago. He said, I'm going to Chicago. I signed a contract. And again, I was declared a free agent 3 days before I signed the contract. But then again, or Fort, or whatever it was. But then again, they had the series they decided on. So was the league still operating the day that Quinn was purchased by, It really was, like they say in the ruling, a very unfortunate situation. It really was. Yeah. Anyone else? No, he didn't, and I don't think he'd be the kind of person that would have done that. He joined the Yankees. And in 1920, his second year with them, he was one of the best pitchers in the American League. Unfortunately, they gave up on this 38-year-old guy after 21 who pitched for 12 more years and had the oldest pitcher to win a game until Jamie Moyer broke his record a few years ago. Well, he actually went to Chicago in early August, and I think he won his first game against the Yankees right on August 6th or August 10th. On the 24th, the National Commission said, we reject Charles Comiskey's claim. He belongs to the Yankees, and he still was pitching. They were a few days. The season ended a week later. I don't think he went to New York at all, even though, he had 5 days. I don't know, it would have taken 2 or 3 to take the train there. It's really very visual when you see the complications here. It's a mess. Okay, thank you. If anybody else wants to ask a question, I'll be right outside the room here.